Anyway, tonight's topic is four power questions to ask an evolutionist. I'd like to start this off by asking, how many of you like to lose all the time? Anybody here like to lose all the time? How many of you like to win? Yes, I like to win. But unfortunately, when it comes down to conversations about Christianity, Christians are most always on the defense and don't have any offense. And if all you have is a defense, no offense, what's the best you can ever hope to do? Maybe tie. Most of the time you're going to lose. So tonight I'm going to show you a part of apologetics, which means we have a verbal defense for what we believe, which is a biblical command for all Christians to be able to do, is how to go on the offense with apologetics. How to ask the right questions, and then take the discussion to the gospel of Jesus Christ, where the power really is. So let's get started. Four power questions to ask an evolutionist. Our topics will be, the Bible has answers, the origin of the universe, the origin of life, the fossil record, and the origin of dinosaurs. We will do all that in about 55 minutes, and you will understand it. That is a command. That is how Marines talk. So we'll start here. The Bible does have answers. Does the Bible tell us who created? Absolutely. God is the creator of all things. That is mentioned in almost every book of the Bible. So it does tell us what he created. Colossians 1:16, for by him all things were created. Now, does the Bible tell us how God created? Yes, it does. He spoke it into existence by his great power. Now, I see a lot of these religion teachers out there denying that the Bible teaches how God created. If they would just read the Bible. Their hang-up is this. If we can't do it, then neither can God. Folks, that is called idolatry right there. Because what you're doing is making God in our image. And we have too many professors out there doing just that. Now, does the Bible tell us when everything was created? Sure does. And there's no controversy. It's called in the beginning. That's how the Bible starts. And the Gospel of John. But does the Bible tell us how long it took God to create? Sure does. 6 literal days. And that is exactly what the Bible teaches. 6 literal days. So we have answers. We know who created, what was created, how it was created, when it was created, and how long it took to create. We have answers. But what about the people who believe in evolution? Do they really have answers for what they believe? Well, here's a problem I run into all the time. I can ask 10 different evolutionists to give me a definition of evolution, and I might get 10 different answers. And not one of them will accurately describe Darwinian evolution. Not one of them. Because they've been trained to give what we call very fuzzy definitions. See, in science, definitions must be clear and precise. And they have not done that in our textbooks. So what is evolution? Well, first of all, it's based on a worldview called materialism. Materialism is the ideology that all that exists is mass and energy. There are no supernatural forces, no gods. Therefore, if evolution is true, then the Bible is clearly wrong, because you cannot combine the two. So, now, we've got a basic foundation. Evolution is based on materialism. We've seen the Bible does have answers. But now, let's get down to the power questions. How to bring down strongholds. Are we on now?
I'm not
sure. Test 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3. I'm switching it back and forth.
I'm sorry, you know what?
What?
Completely my fault. You could be on the set.
Do we need it? Can you hear me?
Yes.
We may not even need it.
There we go.
Okay, now we're on? Okay. Should I start all over again? No. I don't even remember what I said. Well, let's get to the first power question. The first power question deals with the origin of the universe. How did it get here? Where we're commonly taught about 13 to 15 billion years ago, something exploded. called the Big Bang. And from this explosion came all the stars, the galaxies, the planets, and life. Now, when we think about this Big Bang, don't think of it as a dynamite kind of explosion. That is not what the evolutionists teach. What they teach the Big Bang is it's a hot fireball. It's an expansion of space and time. So that's the Big Bang. Well, that is a very interesting story that the entire universe came from there. But power question number one is, where did the matter come from to create that Big Bang? Because we cannot have something go bang until we have something that can go bang. That's just good logic and science. And I get all kinds of answers from them. Such as, Mike, nobody would ask a dumb question like that. And I just keep asking the question because it's a very good scientific question. Or, Mike, science doesn't deal with that. Well, I have a book that does. Would you like to read it? It begins with, In the Beginning God Created. And what we're seeing now is these professors in these schools are telling their students they're not allowed to ask that question in a classroom. At that point, when a professor says that, they've left the realm of education. They're no longer educators. They're in there to coerce or indoctrinate students into their particular faith or belief system. So where did the matter come from? Well, let's take a look at some answers. Paul Davies, he's an evolutionist, wrote a book called The Edge of Infinity. And he's going to tell us where the matter came from. The Big Bang represents the instantaneous suspension of physical laws. The sudden, abrupt flash of lawlessness that allowed something to come out of nothing. It represents a true miracle. Wait a minute. They have a big problem here, not us. Because when we read the Bible, we have miracles. All through the Bible, we see miracles. But we have a miracle maker. His name's called God. So we have a reasonable faith. Miracles with a miracle maker. Now, he's describing evolution as requiring miracles, but they have no miracle maker. That is called a blind faith. Now, Discover Magazine, it's not a Christian magazine, not at all. They're going to describe where the matter came from. Now, this is supposed to be science, and we'll read through this one. The universe burst into something from absolutely nothing. Zero. Nada. And as it got bigger, it became filled with even more stuff that came from absolutely nowhere. And that is science. It's not looking too good so far. Now let's go to Joseph Silk. Now Joseph Silk is a very good astronomer. He does believe in evolution, but he's a very good astronomer. He wrote a book called The Big Bang. And I will commend him. I read through his entire book, and in this part, he gives a very honest statement. It is only fair to say we still have a theory without a beginning. But that statement, folks, is not allowed in textbooks. Why? Because it is an accurate scientific statement. Therefore, it is not allowed. Now, Stan Oswald, PhD in astrophysics, also an evolutionist, wrote a book called The Astronomical Effect. And I will commend him also because he gives a very honest answer. Astronomers have not the slightest evidence for the supposed quantum production of the universe out of a primordial nothingness. In other words, they have no clue where their model starts, no clue where this universe came from. They have no foundation whatsoever. Now, I'm going to do something here. I'm going to tell you where this universe came from without using God. Do I have your interest now? Now, how many like physics here? Anybody like physics? I didn't get enough hands. Let me rephrase this. Did you know physics is in the Bible? Do you like the Bible? Then how many like physics? Yes, in the Bible. Okay, very good. Now that we've established you all like physics, we like physics because it's in the Bible, and physics is fun. Is that right? Physics is fun. Yes, yes, okay. So, since we like physics, in order to describe how this universe got here without using God, we're going to make this even more fun because we're going to talk about quantum physics. How many are excited now? Quantum. Oh, good. Excellent. Quantum physics. I like it. Quantum physics. Now, if I get a little technical, I'll repeat this. If I go a little fast, I'll repeat this also. So, how the universe got here. quantum physics. There was nothing. Then there was something. Did I go too fast? Now, wait a minute now. They actually give this a name. It is called a quantum fluctuation. Do you know what a quantum fluctuation is in reality? It's another name for magic. Because, folks, from nothing, nothing comes. And that is good science and logic. The evolutionists have no foundation for their entire philosophy. No beginning. Oh, but Mike, if you're going to challenge me where the universe came from, then I'm going to ask you this question. Who made God? Where did God come from? And unfortunately, that's where most Christians get beat up right there. Because they do not know how to answer this question. But if you know how to answer this question, it becomes a wonderful evangelism tool. That's what apologetics is all about. It's about evangelism. It's not about winning arguments. And we're all called, every Christian is called to be an evangelist. So what I want to do is describe where God came from. And the process I'm going to use the principles of 2 Corinthians 10, 4, and 5. Which teaches that we are to bring down all strongholds and everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. So the first thing I'm going to do is bring down their strongholds. Then I'm going to fill this with the only possible answer. That is called, there's a greater God, and His name is Jesus Christ, and He died for you. That's the tactic I will use here. So let's get started. Who made God? Well, let's start with the Bible. Is that a good place to start with the Bible? Oh, but Mike, they're non-believers. They won't accept that. I don't care. I'm going to start with my most powerful weapon. It's called the Word of God, not my wisdom. Never, ever be ashamed to use the Word of God. And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. Then Revelation, I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. In other words, God is a self-existing, eternal being, no beginning and no end. Now, I know they may not accept that. That's okay. But I'm going to start there, and I'm going to finish there. So let's get to a lesson on science and logic. Now, I'm going to use science and logic to bring down their strongholds. There's only three possible ways for how this universe got here. Only three. The universe created itself, the universe has always existed, or there had to be a creator. Those are the only three options we have. Now, if we can show those first two options cannot be true, what does that leave us with? A creator. That's the tactic we will use. I will show those first two cannot be true, based on the laws of science and logic. So let's start with the first one. The universe created itself. Questions. Can something create itself and can nothing create something? The answer has to be no. From nothing, nothing comes. That's good science and logic right there. Now think about this. In order for something to create itself, that would mean it has to have the power to act before it even exists. How can anything have any power if it does not exist? That would be illogical and unscientific to believe that. Unless you do not want to believe in the laws of science. As a Christian, I accept the laws of science. I do not have to find ways to get around them. You see what we've just done there? We've turned this whole thing around. Where we can show it is the evolutionist that is being unscientific, not the Christian. So we can rule out number one. That's pretty easy, isn't it? That wasn't hard at all. Number two requires a little bit more discussion. The universe has always existed. In other words, it had no beginning. In order to do this one now, we have to understand something about the second law of thermodynamics. There goes your whole evening now, doesn't it? Thermodynamics. Now, what does thermo mean? Heat. Dynamics. We're talking about heat dynamics, heat energy. That is what the second law really deals with. Most definitions in textbooks don't quite get it right. Most definitions I see state we're going from order to disorder. That is not technically correct, folks. Therefore, that kind of a definition is not correct. Why? Because there are natural processes that can go from disorder to order. That can happen naturally in some cases. So saying going order disorder is not accurate. Some people will say we're going from complexity to less complexity. How do you measure that? Something more complex than something else. You can't do that. The second law deals with something called heat energy. Energy goes from a state of usable energy to a state of less usable energy for doing work in an isolated system. That is the accurate definition. Now, let me paraphrase what that means. It means we're in decay. How's that sound? Does that make it easier? Everything in this universe is losing its available energy for doing work. Everything is going downhill. Everything is decaying over time. That's the second law. So now let's use some illustrations. I'm going to describe this second law, how it actually operates, using some examples called no refills. No refills. Let's start off here. Somebody just offered you a brand new car for free. Let's add that in there, for free. And everything for the lifetime of this car is free. You never have to pay anything. Anything goes wrong, it is fixed automatically for free. And you get to choose whatever kind of car you want. Is that a pretty good deal? Wow. How many would choose a nice, fast sports car? If you got a lot of children, you wouldn't do that. There's only one piece in the small print. Right down there in the small print says, all you ever get is one tank of gas, no refills. Did I just spoil everything? One tank of gas. Never get to refill that gasoline tank. So what happens after you've driven that car about 300 miles? Well, you've used up all the gasoline. You've used up all the energy that can be used to drive that car. And once all that energy has been used up, it can no longer be used to drive the car. So what can you do with the car now? You can look at it, polish it. You might break it apart and sell it for parts, but it will no longer go by itself. That is what we mean by the second law. The energy has been used up. It can no longer be used to drive that car. Does that make it a little more simple? Now, let's go to outer space. Stars also have a finite amount of energy. When they burn off all their energy, many will begin to just collapse inward and just explode in what we call a big supernova, a great big gas and dust cloud. So stars have a finite amount of energy. They're not getting any energy refuels. For example, do we use up energy? We sure do, don't we? We walk around, we move around, just breathing, we're using up energy. So why don't we just collapse it? Well, we replenish the energy, don't we? By eating, drinking, and the sun all gives us energy. But stars can't do that. They don't eat or breathe. So stars have a finite amount of energy. Now, what do stars do? Now, I'm going to put this up there. One reason, because I can pronounce the word. That's why I put it up there. They do something called thermonuclear fusion. How many discussed that last night at the dinner table? Nobody. Okay. Now, what do we mean by that? They burn their lighter elements into heavier elements. In other words, hydrogen burns into, is that next one? Helium. Helium into, eventually, carbon. Carbon into oxygen, eventually oxygen into iron. And once they've burned up all their energy, they will begin to just gravitationally collapse inward and then just explode into a great big gas and dust cloud. That's the end of the star. Wow. Now, let's bring this to what it really means. If the universe had no beginning, then we would say it's an infinite number of years old. Infinite number of years old. And just to let you know, if the universe had no beginning, infinite number of years is longer than a trillion years. not this time. Longer than a trillion years. And what does infinity mean? Time without end. Latin, unbound or boundless, unlimited extent of time. That's what infinity means. Now, let's bring this to what it really means. If this universe had no beginning, and stars are constantly burning up their energy, then after about 100 million years, most all our supergiant stars would have been gone. They'd have all burned up their energy because the supergiants burn their energy much faster. There should be no supergiant stars out there in the universe anywhere. And stars like our sun, after about 10 billion years, would have burned off all their energy. They would have all been gone. And after about 100 million years, or 100 billion years, most every star in this universe would be gone. And certainly after a trillion years, every star in this universe would have burned up all its energy and there should be no stars left in this universe. Anybody seen stars lately? Yes. They shouldn't be there. If this universe had no beginning, those stars should not be there anymore. So what does that suggest? The universe had to have a beginning. It had to have a beginning. Oh, wait a minute, Mike. You forgot something very important here. Stars, new stars are forming all the time. That's what I read in the books. Let's take a look how that happens. We're told we get these great big gas and dust clouds out there called nebula. And they rotate around and around and around. As they rotate around and around and around, they will begin to gravitationally collapse inward because of the rotation. But as they collapse inward, we're told, they eventually will form a brand new star. And that's how we keep getting new stars forming. And we give this a technical name. It's called baloney. Number one, no one has ever observed a star to form. No one. And secondly, based on the laws of science, basic physics, stars will not form that way. Why? Because as those clouds rotate around and around, they will begin to gravitationally collapse inward. But as they do so, they generate what is called heat pressure. And we can measure this. The heat pressure is always stronger than the gravity, and will always cause that cloud to expand outward. In other words, folks, we really don't know how stars form. So the only possible way those stars got there is go to day 4. He made the stars also. No one has ever observed a star form, and the principles of physics say no. Even those great big gas and dust clouds out there, like the Eagle Nebula, the Orion Horsehead, they call these things star nurseries. So many bright spots in there. You know, we can now see into those great big gas and dust clouds with what we call infrared technology. And you know what they discovered about these clouds? There's too little gas there, and they are all expanding, not collapsing. Again, and he made the stars also. So based on good science, if this universe had no beginning, there should be no stars out there. But the fact that we do see stars means the universe had to have a beginning. It cannot be an infinite number of years old. That is a fact based on what we observe. So now, we've shown number one can't be true, and we've shown number two can't be true. What are we left with? What we have now done is broken down the strongholds. Now we will answer the question, where did God come from? There are two possibilities. Two possibilities. There is a regression of God back to a first powerful God who created everything. In other words, who created God? That's easy. A super God made God. Well, who made the super God? That's easy. A super, super God made the super God who made God. And you keep going back and back and back and back till you get the original God who created all things. Or, there's one God who created everything. Now, how are we going to decide which one to accept? Well, the first thing we can do is invoke what's called the principle of Occam's razor, which teaches this. If you've got more than one possibility, choose the simplest or the one with the least assumptions. And which one is the one with the least assumptions? We take it right from the Bible again. Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me. We start with the Bible. We end with the Bible. Where did God come from? He's a self-existing eternal being. No beginning, no end. And that does not violate any laws of science. Because he is not bound by the laws of science. He created them. So now, let's finish this piece with what I call strategic evangelism. If evolutionists unable to explain the origin of the universe through naturalistic means, then evolution is without a foundation. Why should I accept evolution when you cannot produce the evidence? I already have a faith. Tell me about your faith, and I will tell you about my faith. By the way, tell me what your faith has to offer me, and I will tell you what my faith in Jesus Christ has to offer you. In other words, we have a reasonable faith. We have answers. You see, it is logical and reasonable to believe that God, not unknown magical events, created this universe. We have answers. We know who created, what was created, how it was created, when it was created, and how long it took to create. We have a logical and reasonable faith. So the first part of the question, where did the universe come from? They have no foundation for what they believe. No answer. So let's go to power question number two, the origin of life. How did life originate? Well, we have two choices here. Either life evolved by naturalistic processes or life was created. There are no third choices here. To believe we came from outer space does not answer the question, where did life come from? How did it start? So we have two possibilities, naturalistic processes or there was created. Now, here's your basic evolution story. Over millions of years, in some primordial soup, molecules bonded together to make the first living cell. In other words, their formula is time plus chance equals life. That's their formula. Let's see if it works. Now, before we get into this, we need to do a review of some terms. Because some of you, it looks like, may have been out of the biology classroom for maybe a year or two. So I'm going to do a little review. Our first term, atoms. What are they? Basic building blocks of matter. Basic unit of matter. Now, what do atoms do? Well, they will bond together to form what we call molecules, such as water, H2O. We're pretty familiar with that so far, aren't we? Now, what can molecules do? Well, molecules sometimes can bond together to make things called amino acids. Now, amino acids are very important here. Why? Because they're like the building blocks of life. If we can't get amino acids, we cannot get life. That's how important they are. And then finally, amino acids can form, bond together, to make what are called proteins. So that's our sequence. That's all we need to get through this topic here. See how easy biology is? Pretty easy, isn't it? Yeah, it's easy, isn't it? Yeah. Well, let's go back to the 1950s. Something called the Miller Experiment. In the 1950s, Miller set out to create the building blocks of life in a laboratory. Now, notice I did not say life. That was not his objective. His objective was to create amino acids using natural processes, so he could teach everybody we don't need God. So he built this experiment in his laboratory, called it a spark chamber. And then there he tried to simulate the Earth's atmosphere. What he believed the atmosphere was on this Earth, these alleged billions of years ago. So he put gases such as methane and ammonia. Then he left oxygen out. Then he generated electrical sparks in there to drive the chemical reactions. Then it goes on to state that Miller got amino acids. And folks, that is a fact. Miller really did get amino acids. Wow. But what we have to do here is something called critical thinking. Something that doesn't seem to occur a lot when talking about evolutionism. Critical thinking. What I'm going to do is just analyze two aspects of this experiment. Number one, why did Miller choose the gases he did to put in there? Why did he leave oxygen out? How did he know what the Earth's atmosphere was like these supposed billions of years ago? Number two, what type of amino acids did Miller get? The books don't give us that much information. They just say he got amino acids. Well, let's start here. Miller left oxygen out of his experiment. Why did he do that? Well, Miller was a very smart man. He knew, as we know today through observable science, that life cannot start in the presence of oxygen in the atmosphere. Why? We need oxygen, don't we? Yes, at our level we need oxygen. But at the molecular level, oxygen destroys chemical bonds. So amino acids could never form in an oxygen atmosphere. Could never get a protein. So he had to leave oxygen out. He assumed the early Earth had no oxygen in it, even though the only trend in the recent literature is the suggestion of far more oxygen in the atmosphere than anyone imagined. In other words, the scientific evidence clearly supports this planet has always had oxygen. So who now is ignoring the scientific evidence? Christians or evolutionists? It is the evolutionists who are ignoring the science. So what we will do now, we will play their game. Let's assume this earlier had no oxygen, as they're teaching. We'll just assume that for a moment. If we have no oxygen in the atmosphere, that means we also have to take away the ozone, which protects us. What is the ozone made of? Oxygen. Oh, great. And you know what happens when we take the ozone away? We all become instant crispy critters. That's the technical term. Because the ultraviolet rays of that sun will come down and fry all life. So what we know based on observable and repeatable science then is life cannot start with oxygen in the atmosphere and it cannot start without oxygen. Is this looking pretty good? It's kind of looking like a verse we have in Romans 1:19 and 20. Romans 1:19 and 20 teaches us that God has given us all the evidence and no one has an excuse for not believing in a creator. There are no excuses anywhere in the world. But wait a minute, Mike. You forgot something. What about the possibility life started down deep in the oceans? What about that? Life started so far down in the oceans, the ultraviolet rays of the sun could not penetrate. Maybe that's how it happened. Interesting concept, life starting in water. But it does present a little bit of a problem. There's a word called hydrolysis. It's in your dictionaries. Hydro means water. Hydrolysis literally means water splitting. See, at the molecular level, water destroys chemical bonds. As soon as any amino acids might have formed within the oceans, within a matter of weeks, they would have all been destroyed. Wow. There's not many places left now, are there? This is really starting to look like Romans 1:19 and 20. No one has an excuse. But we do have to address this. Miller did get amino acids. That's a fact. He got amino acids. Now, there are literally hundreds of types of amino acids out there. Hundreds of types of amino acids. But these amino acids come in two shapes. Just like we have a left hand and a right hand. Well, left and right hand are about the same, aren't they? Four fingers and a thumb. But are they really the same? Not quite. Because when you put one hand behind the other, notice the thumb and fingers are on the opposite side. So they're really not quite the same. Your left and right hand are what we call mirror images of each other. That's how they fit together, mirror images. Now, those amino acids come in the same shape. Guess what we call them? And you were thinking, what, left and right-handed amino acids, weren't you? Very good. I knew you knew that. Thank you for that. Yes. Now, we do have other names, but predominantly what you're going to see is left and right-handed amino acids. What's the difference between them? Well, like our hands, they're made up of the same components, same atoms. And also, like our hands, they are mirror images of each other. Now, why is this so important? This is important because every single amino acid in every protein in your body, and you have trillions of these in you, is left-handed. You do not have a single right-handed amino acid in any protein in your body. Matter of fact, every amino acid in every protein in all life forms is 100% left-handed. Now, why is that so important? Well, let's go back to the Miller experiment. This is where our textbook authors are deceiving our students. Not educating, but deceiving. What Miller ended up with was an even mixture of 50% left-handed and 50% right-handed. Folks, that is not even close to life. That is as far away from life as you can get. It is a poison to life. Why don't they put the real science on? But it's going to get better. It's going to keep getting better. Every experiment we've ever done always has ended up with an even mixture of left and right-handed. Even when we start with all left-handed amino acids, they will naturally start reverting back to a mixture of left and right-handedness. In other words, the natural tendency is always away from life, never towards life. So how could it ever get started on its own? And it gets better. It just keeps getting better. Isn't science wonderful? When we die, now remember, we're made up of 100% left-handed amino acids. And when we die and we become as dead as we can be, and that will be pretty dead, won't it? Do you know what happens to our 100% left-handed amino acids? They start reverting back to a mixture of left and right-handedness. What did Miller really simulate? Death, poison to life. That is all that man can do. Now, I have a question. They know the Miller experiment failed. They just don't want to tell our students. So why do they continue to put no wrong information in the textbooks? Well, I'm going to answer that. Now, in order to answer that, I'm going to have to now, this is really going to get you. I'm now going to exercise my spiritual gift. Now, I see, I really, I don't have any snakes up here, not worried. Isn't it? My spiritual gift is creating anxiety in other people. And I have fun with this. How am I going to do that? I'm now going to give you a math problem. How many are a little worried right now? I'm going to give you this math problem. And you all must have an answer. Why? Because I'm going to call on you. And I'm going to call on you even if you aren't looking at me. Notice I slow down when I do this because I really enjoy exercising my spiritual gift. Now let me give you this math problem before you try an answer. Let me qualify with the answers you can give. So here is your math problem. How much is 3 plus 1, and you cannot use the number 4, because I do not like the way it looks. It's a little bit too religious for me, and we're talking science right now. I want your answer as an exact number. I will not accept 3.9993. I don't need fingers. Keep your shoes on. Do not want to see your toes. I do not want any Roman numerals. I do not want the answer spelled out. If you're multilingual, I want your answer in English. I do not want any formulas like 10 minus 6 for 2 squared. And if you're one of these computer people, I want your answer in base 10. Now the rule is, if you give me a wrong religious answer, you will be doing 20 push-ups tonight. Have I given enough anxiety and fear? So who has an answer to 3 plus 1 before I just start calling? Yes? 327. Just keep it something small so everybody can answer.
Nine.
That is correct. Thank you. That is correct. Nine. So we got somebody that understands math here. And we also have an answer. Okay? We'll do this the what we do in the military. We're going to do it this way. You move, you get here. And you were going to say six, weren't you?
Five? Okay, I'll take five. Very good. How did you know that, Matt? That's very good math. Well, thank you for volunteering right there. You were going to say six, weren't you?
That's right.
And that is correct. Now, wait. How are all these different answers like? Nine and six and five. You're correct. With a simple little problem like 3 plus 1. But here's your answer. If you rule the solution out, if you rule the truth out, you must accept anything in its place. And folks, that is what evolution really is. They rule out the truth of a greater God and must put anything in its place. Even to the point of the day of teaching our students 3 plus 1 can equal 7. Because that's the kind of teaching they're doing when they teach the Miller experiment succeeded when it is known to be wrong. What we've observed over these last 50 years is our students are coming out of these schools repeating the same mistake over and over again because we're unwilling to teach true science anymore in our classrooms. We'd rather teach evolution than true science.
And that's the problem we have in our education system. Now, that's the end of my exercise in my spiritual gift. Are you happy now? Yes. Hubert Yahti, PhD in physics, wrote a book called Information Theory, Evolution, and the Origin of Life. Now, he's an evolutionist, well-respected evolutionist. What does he say? A great deal of effort has been expended in finding theories for the origin of life without success. Franklin M. Harrell, professor of biochemistry, evolutionist. The origin of life is also a stubborn problem with no solution in sight. Don Johnson, PhD in chemistry and a PhD in computer and information science. Since there is no known scientific procedure to generate life in the laboratory, let alone by some unknown prebiotic mechanism, one could assume the probability of life from purely physical causes is zero. These are pretty good scientists, folks. No person on this planet can even get a single protein, let alone the rest of the cell. Here's David L. Abel, PhD in molecular biology and a PhD in information systems and management. In short, belief in the spontaneous generation of the DNA code, or life, through natural processes is without rationale. Empirical or predictive support, the notion is not even feasible. These are pretty good scientists saying exactly what is true. We cannot create life. And it could not happen through naturalistic means, no matter how much time you have. So if scientists are unable to explain the origin of life through naturalistic means, then they are without a foundation. Why should I accept evolution when you cannot produce the evidence? I already have a faith. Tell me about your faith, and I'll tell you about my faith. By the way, tell me what your faith in evolution has to offer me, and I'll tell you what my faith in Jesus Christ has to offer you. We're back to the gospel there. Break down the strongholds and give the gospel. Fill it with the gospel. Therefore, it is logical and reasonable to believe that God, not unknown events, created life. We have a rational and reasonable faith. We know who created, what was created, how it was created, when it was created, and how long it took to create. We do have the answers. So, first power question, where did the universe come from? They have to accept that by faith. Second power question, how did life originate? They have to accept that by faith. Let's go to the third power question, the fossil record. Oh, Mike. There's books this thick on the fossil record. We're going to run out of time. Can I show you how to do the fossil record in about 6 minutes or less? It's an understanding how to ask the right questions. how to ask the right questions. Fossil record. Here's the typical picture we have of this fossil record, geologic timescale. We have the least complex on the bottom, and as we move up, we get more and more complex. You know that's not what we predominantly find. We find these things all scattered and mixed together. Every once in a while, we find some sequence, but most of the time, we find them all mixed and scattered together. For instance, we find dinosaurs buried with many kinds of creatures. They just don't seem to want to put that in the textbooks. But you don't have to go all up and down that fossil record. Just go down to the bottom layers, the Precambrian layers and the Cambrian. Just go down there. Wow! Because what we find down there are fossils of single cells. Yes, we do find fossils of single cells. What we also find down there are fossils of very complex creatures like trilobites, jellyfish, seashells. So we find lots of things down at the bottom layers. Now, if you can't remember Precambrian and Cambrian, just say the bottom layers. Does that make it easy? So here's our chart. Put a chart up here. On the vertical, I have time. On the horizontal, I have morphology, which means shape, design. And then down the middle, I have a dotted line separating the Precambrian layers and the Cambrian. Now, evolution is true. Since we do find fossils of single cells, we should also find fossils of 2-cell, 10-cell, 100-cell, 1,000-cell, million-cell creatures down there. We should find them everywhere. Okay. So here's the evolution story. We start with a single cell, and from that single cell, we have this whole tree of life branching off. Stop right there. If you let that discussion go, you've just told me you believe in evolution. Because in that statement, I put an assumption in there. Did anybody catch the assumption? Yes, you did. Right, right. We start with a single cell. I knew you knew that. Very good. Thank you. I got this front row doing pretty good here. Right. We start with a single cell. Stop. Where did the cell come from? They're assuming that cell originated by itself. Folks, if we can't get that first cell, we have no tree of life. It's dead right there. The whole Darwinian model of evolution is dead right there. No foundation. You see the importance of recognizing assumptions and asking questions. The Bible's to live. That's why the origin of life is so important here.
So let's take a look and analyze this. They have that cell, supposedly, and they have this tree of life. Again, if evolution is true, we find transitions all up and down there from single cell to these very complex seashells. But the fact is, what we find in the fossil record is these complex creatures appearing in the fossil record with no transitions leading up to them. None. This might surprise you, but it looks like they were created after their kind. Wow, that is exactly what the fossil record shows, created after their kind. No transitions. Richard Barnes, in his book, The Invertebrate, A New Synthesis. This is a textbook out there, sometimes used. Here's what he has to say in the book, The Invertebrate. Most of the animal phyla that are represented in the fossil record first appear fully formed in the Cambrian some 550 million years ago. The fossil record is therefore of no help with respect to the origin and early diversification of the various animal phyla. What is in that book? No transitions. That's why it's so important to go down to the bottom layers. No foundation for the fossil record. Now, wait a minute, Mike. Wait a minute. I carry on my conversations here. I've opened up numerous textbooks, and in these textbooks, I see pictures of transitions leading to whales. We actually have pictures of whales with legs on them, meaning some mammal went back in the ocean and became a whale. We have the pictures in the textbooks, and yes, those pictures are in there. But a great question you can ask is this. How much of the fossil did they actually find, and how much was added by artists? Oh, wait, we found a 4-inch knob of one of these whales, and we know that used to be a leg. Yes, they did find a 4-inch knob. You know what a 4-inch knob is on a 70-foot long creature? It is not a leg. It is a pimple. And incidentally, when fully examined, that 4-inch knob was never a leg. It was part of the reproductive process. Total misinterpretation. And that's what we continually get. Find a few fossils, hire the artist, and draw it in to represent evolution, not science. So based on the evolution model, the entire foundation for Darwinian evolution, the fossil record, is not there. It's missing. It does not support evolution. So why should I accept evolution when you cannot produce the evidence? I already have a faith. Tell me about your faith, and I'll tell you about my faith. By the way, tell me what your faith in evolution has to offer me, and I'll tell you what my faith in Jesus Christ has to offer you. Would you like to know more about it? Where do we end up again? The gospel. That's where we want to end up. Therefore, it is logical and reasonable to believe that God, not unknown events, created all life after its kind. We have a logical, reasonable faith. We have answers. We know who created, what was created, how it was created, when it was created, and how long it took to create. We have answers. So let's go to the last question now, dealing with dinosaurs. It's all about asking the right question again. See, the common question is, what happened to the dinosaurs? Well, that's very easy. They died. Okay, so we took care of that. The power question is, where did they come from? Now, why is that so powerful? Why do museums all over this world, you know what I see in museums? Dinosaurs. What am I not seeing? All the thousands of transitions that led up to the dinosaurs. They're nowhere to be found in any museum in this world. All we see are dinosaurs. The standard story we have is this. Dinosaurs evolved into existence about 220 million years ago and died out about 65 million years ago, long before man was here. If you're believing that, folks, you've just destroyed the entire foundation for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Why? Because a belief dinosaurs died out before man was here is a belief in death, decay, and disease before sin. If there was already death and decay before sin, why did Jesus have to go to the cross? Why did he have to physically die? And also in Genesis 1:31, God looked back at his entire creation. He just called death, decay, disease, and cancer very good. You see, that's the standard story, which is not a biblical story, nor is it a scientific story. Let me show you some excerpts from some books here dealing with dinosaurs. The Illustrated Encyclopedia of Dinosaurs. The question of the origin of dinosaurs is one that has puzzled paleontologists for many years. Why can't they put an honest statement like that in our textbooks? The reason is, it's true science, and they'd rather teach evolution. The Natural History Museum Book of Dinosaurs. Where did dinosaurs come from? That apparently simple question has been the subject of intense debate among scientists for over 150 years. They still don't know. Smithsonian Institute, an atheistic organization out of Washington, D.C. The discussion over where dinosaurs came from in the first place is often overlooked. Hypotheses of dinosaur origins have been just as controversial as those of triggers for the end Cretaceous mass extinction. What did they just say from the Smithsonian Institute? They don't know where dinosaurs came from. Wow. Now, I went through a lot of books also. And I was able to find one book that said they had found a transition. And they called this creature a theconid. And about every 5 or 6 years, they changed the name, because it doesn't work. And here's how they describe this theconid. Small lizards that ran on two legs and gave rise to the giant reptiles collectively known as the dinosaurs. Now let's do a little critical thinking and examine that evidence. Here's our theconid, running around on two legs, about this tall. And we're being asked to believe that that creature evolved into another creature such as a triceratops, has long horns, bony frills, runs around on how many legs? Four. And that same creature evolved into the large sauropod dinosaurs and creatures like Stegosaurus and left absolutely no evidence how it happened. Folks, great claims require real evidence. And our students are not getting real evidence. So if scientists are unable to produce the thousands of transitions necessary for the origin of dinosaurs, then they're without a foundation. Again, why should I accept evolution when you cannot produce the real evidence? I already have a faith. Tell me about your faith, and I will tell you about my faith. And tell me what your faith in evolution has to offer me, and I will tell you what my faith in Jesus Christ has to offer you. Therefore, it is logical and reasonable that God, not unknown events, created the dinosaurs. We have a logical and reasonable faith. Four power questions there. You know, there's more than just four. There's many power questions you can ask that break down those strongholds. So what is evolution? Faith. It cannot be defended scientifically. It is nothing but a faith system. That's all it is. We do have answers. We know who created, what was created, how it was created, when it was created, and how long it took to create. And at that point, we can tell you something about our Creator. Do you know Him? Do you know the Creator? His name is Jesus Christ. He's not only the Creator, but He's our Savior. God told us how much He loved us. In Romans 5:8, He told us that He loved us while we were still dead in our sins. And God has told us it doesn't matter what you have done. He has told us His grace and mercy can cover anything you have done. Do you know Him? Would you like to know Him? He is a God of mercy, a God of grace, a God of love. But He also is a God of judgment. Let's not forget that. What can we do about this then? Our youth are under attack all across the world by this philosophy. Number one, we can get resources. If you had to get started, if you've never been involved in this, these are the books you want to get. These are written for the layperson. Each book contains about 25 challenges and how to answer those challenges. Each chapter is only about 10 pages long. This is the best place to get started. They go from the very basic to only at maximum medium technical at most. But they're for the layperson. You don't have to go through these books sequentially. You can start with whatever chapter you want. Powerful books. You as parents need to get things like this so you can start teaching your children how to answer the questions, the challenges. Feel free to open them up and look at the challenges that are in there. Here's a nice book that's not hard to read, written by a biologist. It covers the fossil record, the origin of life, and things like DNA. Written for a person who hasn't really had anything beyond biology, just basic biology. If you want a great one, easy to read, on how long were the days of creation and how to refute compromise, here's a great one called The 6 Days of Genesis. And for those of you who happen to like astronomy, here's one of the best astronomy books out there because it's not real hard to read. There are some technical things in there, but not bad. And it's full of wonderful pictures and it's thin. Tremendous book on astronomy, written by a PhD astrophysicist. And in there, he answers the question, how could the distant starlight reach us in only 6,000 years? He gives answers for those. So powerful book there. So we have lots of resources. Then you want to take the next step. Once you've read something about it, you can't stop there. Then we need to get trained. Why? Because it's up to us as the parents to train the next generation. The next step is training. We have a new ministry out that I'm running. We started last year called Creation Training Initiative, CTI. We have basic to in-depth training courses. We have a one-day basic creation training class. Runs from 8:30 to 5:30. We have another course called Advanced Creation Apologetics. and we're developing more courses. What's in these courses? Here's your basic creation training class. You get the importance of Genesis. Genesis and biblical authority, how to answer basic challenges. Understanding and using apologetics. In other words, you're learning how to answer questions like, where did Cain get his wife? How could the first 3 days be a real days without the sun? How could Adam name all the animals in one day? Is there any science mentioned in the Bible? Why can we trust the Bible? What about carbon 14? This is for the beginner. This class is for the beginner in this. Then we have some understanding basic scientific evidences. That course, full day class. How do you get that class? Well, all we need is a church to sponsor. What I mean by sponsor is to give us a place where we can teach it and help us advertise it. We go to you to teach these courses. You do not have to come to us. Then we have our more advanced creation apologetics for the Christian who wants to take the real next step. This gets into arguing the existence of God, understanding presuppositions, the transcendental argument for God's existence, issues in science and critical thinking skills. We go into the value of asking good questions. When you're challenged, how to turn the entire conversation around, put the other person in the defense. That's the type of thing we can do. Logic and logical fallacies, the resolving the problem of evil, and always the gospel. This is a day and a quarter, day and a half class. Our first class will be July by the Creation Museum in Kentucky. Then we're going to Florida, and then we'll go wherever somebody wants us to come. That's what we're doing there. If you want to find out more, we have some nice brochures out there. Find out more about these classes. Go to our website and get a detailed outline of what's in the classes called creationtraining.org. And you can also find out how to support what we're trying to do. Because we can't do this and lose money. We need the support so that we can travel and keep our costs down. In other words, that one-day class costs $45 per student. What do you get for $45? You get an 80-page manual that contains all the PowerPoint slides in there, plus text besides the PowerPoint slides. We feed you lunch and snacks for the whole day. That's what you get for $45, folks. That's pretty cheap. Because I used to teach computer courses. Per person was $200 to $300 a day. Some of you understand that. And that was 20 years ago. So what we're trying to do with this new ministry is get enough people trained out there so that you can start teaching and speaking on this, so that you can start training this next generation, so they stop becoming the casualties when they enter those classrooms, and they become the influencers. We want to get this next generation trained so we stop losing. So I'll stop there. And I'll hand it back. And then we'll have a time for question and answers. If you have questions, I'll try and answer. But I might have questions too.